I found myself, when I was reading it, wondering where she was going next. Once I saw it was not simply about her memories of going with her mother or taking her child to the library, it was then about the fire and what happened there. But that quickly morphed into something else. And about halfway through the book, I thought, I do now wonder, with all these subplots, where she's going next. That feeling like I feel kind of lost and confused. And that made me think, I mean, I was literally felt like I was lost in the library through the whole thing. And then I thought, gee, that's kind of lost in the stacks, isn't it?
You are listening to WREK Atlanta, and this is Lost in the Stacks, the Research Library Rock and Roll Radio Show. I am Charlie. I'm in the studio with, well, it's slim pickings right now, folks. It's me, Fred, and Amit. Each week on Lost in the Stacks, we pick a theme and then use it to create a mix of music and library talk. Whichever you're here for, we hope you dig it.
That's right, Charlie. Today's show is called The Library Book.
Not just any library book, but rather the nonfiction volume published by Susan Orlean in 2018 about the fire at the Los Angeles Public Library in 1986.
Described in the book's promotional material like this, quote, "The fire reached 2,000 degrees and burned for more than 7 hours. It was the largest library fire in the history of the United States. It destroyed 400,000 books and damaged 700,000 more, and shut the library down for 7 years," end quote.
As she investigates the fire, Orlean also explores the roles libraries play in cities, families, and individual memory making.
She says her relationship with her mother and her memories of visiting the library with her mom as a child inspired the writing of the book.
We did a little reading club for this episode, and speaking of mothers, as we did, our reading club included Wendy's mom, Debbie, who lives in California. You'll hear snippets of Wendy's conversation with Debbie about the book woven throughout today's show.
And if you want to join the conversation, the hashtag for this show is LITS450 for Lost in the Stacks, episode 450. You feeling old, Amit?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I felt old at episode 4.
Yeah. Feel free to tweet your thoughts, questions, or library fire stories with that hashtag.
And our songs today are about, let me take a look at this script.
Make sure you get it right.
They're all about burning and flames and fire.
Which is only proper.
And Marley Givens, our colleague and co-producer of this episode, has suggested a song that could kick things off and set the tone. It's got references to Los Angeles and references to burning things down. Sounds like it's got everything we need. And Peter Buck on guitar. This is Electrolyte by REM right here on Lost in the Stacks, Rickenbacker.
Your eyes, I'm out of here.
That was Electrolyte by REM right here on Lost in the Stacks. A suggestion by our guest co-producer, Marley Givens, who has slipped into the studio.
That's right.
Welcome, and thank you for that suggestion. Today's Lost in the Stacks is called The Library Book. It's a book club episode. We're discussing Susan Orlean's The Library Book. One of our book club members is by recording from far away. Let's hear more from Wendy's mom, Debbie, to start this segment.
Okay, so in my thoughts about it, I kind of separated my thoughts between finding out about this fire in, you know, 1986, when I realized this is a fire that started in L.A., which is 30 miles north of where I grew up, and how amazed I was that I had never heard about it. Then the other thought I had was how we take for granted not only books but libraries. And I could relate that to how small of a reaction there seemed to be to that fire on April 29th, 1986. Not only on my part, but obviously the media, the country. But I was really struck by how for granted we take what's in the library.
Well, that's kind of a disheartening beginning, but let's go ahead and try and recover from that. So we are a bunch of library professionals who read this book. Now, Debbie, of course, knows about archivists because she's the mom of one. Mm-hmm. But her take was, oh, it's this huge deal. All of these books damaged or destroyed, a whole library burning for 7 hours at 2,000 degrees, I mean, and it just didn't really make the news. I think it would make our news, though.
I think so. Oh, the library news?
Yeah.
Yes, it would make the library news. Yeah, yeah.
So, Marley, let's start with a question that's sort of broad, but specific to this room. What was it like being a librarian and reading this book?
Oh, I was hooked from the first chapter. I read the first chapter, and I remember posting on Facebook, this opening chapter is just it's a love letter to libraries. And it's written by someone who, very similar to me, had a formative experience in libraries as a child. I was just going back to chapter one in the book. Susan Orlean says, the library might have been the first place I was ever given autonomy. And she describes just being able to go through the stacks and find what she wants to read. And no one told her what to choose. And I had a very similar experience to that. So that was great. And she also spends a lot of time getting to know the people who work in the library. And she does a lot of description of people who were using the library. Just before that, saying that the autonomy quote, she describes a man who was who had snuck a bag of Doritos into the library to read to eat while he was reading, and he pretended to muffle a cough each time he ate a chip. She really captures what it's like to be in a public library, and that was my first experience at the library and my first love.
We've talked about vocational awe before on the program, talking about how there's a certain sense of librarianship as a calling, libraries as this incredibly important piece, this romanticized piece of life. And so as workers, then we have vocational awe. You should be proud and happy to be working in libraries, even if you're not being paid very much and are being tormented. And the library book appeared to be sort of an institutional awe kind of book. Like, it really very poetically laid out why a person would be overwhelmed by libraries and the library's position. And I felt a little bit conflicted, because I think, you know, it's troublesome to make magical a place of work, even if the end result is really important to the world.
Well, she was coming at it from the perspective of, you know, loving the library as a kid when she was, it was the first place, you know, as Marley was saying, she says it was the first place she was able to go wander off on her own. But then after she left college, she sort of left the library,
right,
as, you know, as a place, as an institution. I think she says, I wrote down what she said. I begin to wonder what libraries were for. You know, she thought about them wistfully, you know, as, you know, they were going to be like a bookmark to her memory of a certain time.
So libraries are attached to childhood, right? That mm-hmm. that curious Victorian
yeah.
invention, you know, that it is just for people to become more, but only in a framework of when you're not, you know, being productive, mm-hmm. when you're not a part of the world.
And this book was like her saying, it's more than that. Discover it with me.
It is. And she did rediscover it with her own children, right? And it reminds me a little bit of, you know, people who grow up going to church and then they leave the church and then they come back when they have children. It's a similar thing.
Didn't I just say,
institutional
awe?
From vocational awe to a spiritual awakening. This is Lost in the Stacks, and we're going to be back with more about the library book and probably about how the library burned after a music set. And you can file this set under TH9119.C36.
You've been listening to Burning Down the House by Talking Heads. Before that, we heard Slow Burn by the Howling Bells, songs about places of refuge not being safe anymore. Welcome back to Lost in the Stacks. We're having a book club episode discussing The Library Book by Susan Orlean. We'll let Debbie set the stage again for this segment's discussion.
I had an interesting kind of a coincidental occurrence that happened the evening before you contacted me, asking me if I'd be interested in talking about the book. I was driving back at night. It was about 7:30, and it's dark and it's raining and some of the Christmas lights are up. I really started missing you guys. I started to drive by the library and I thought, well, I could just go into the library. I could go into the library and I would feel better. That there was something about being at the Los Altos Library that I was being pulled to that. This is just fascinating to me. Now, I didn't go in. It was 7:30 at night. You know, but I thought that now if I wanted to, I could go to the library and I could feel better. And then it was the next day that you asked if I wanted to talk about it. So that for sure brought to mind how, whether it's a library or some other place or places in our lives, become a place of refuge. You might even call it gratitude. It is a place to be and feel kind of safe and comfortable and comforted. There seemed to be a lot of that in what she had to say about the people who frequented the library. She talks about L.A. public library primarily, but many other libraries, why people go. Some people go on the very direct errand of getting a specific book, but there are the people, and I've noticed this when I go into the Los Altos library, there are the people who sit there for hours and they're just there. Some of them, I think, are either homeless or I think lonely, older people who are by themselves, who come and just sit at the library and look through books or read their book and even fall asleep in the chairs. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that since I read this book. And it was almost as though the library is populated with books and with people.
I'm getting a little misty. I have children that eventually I will be driving down the road and miss. Thinking about the building itself as a place of refuge, of mental refuge, of comfort, mm-hmm. seems to imply something a little bit more than, you know, the place that you can get books or the archives of a city.
Okay, you're gonna laugh at me again because I'm going to bring up church again.
Okay.
But I was just looking in the library book. Central Library was designed by the architect Bertram Goodhue and opened in 1926. And I looked up Bertram Goodhue, and he has built a lot of churches.
Yeah.
So, for a lot of people, they seek that kind of comfort that Debbie mentioned in both places. And I know that we here on campus have made our library into a third place, you know, a place where you can go and be that's not home and it's not work. But I mean, the library can be that thing to so many different, it can be the thing that somebody needs.
And I think there's a very particular distinction between third places and churches and libraries, maybe churches less so, but I think in the early 20s, churches would be a private place that you did not have to pay to inhabit. Right. You don't have to, you know, these days, I think there might be a lot more locking of church doors, especially in, say, a high crime area. But the library and a church are places where you should be able to walk in and exist without having to purchase, without having to subscribe, without having to give any more of yourself than being a citizen.
The free space.
Yeah.
Where it's not governed by capitalist kind of...
profit motive profit or motive. Excess value. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's also just architecturally both have high ceilings that immediately kind of elevate the spirit as you walk through
Do you
the
remember
threshold.
From our Library of Alexandria episode what the inscription above the entrance might have said? It could translate it as soul hospital.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You know, or hospital for the soul or something along those lines. And yeah, so I think you're obviously onto something, Marley. I'm certainly going to resist it in a kind of joking way. Because, obviously the institutional awe of a church, institutional awe of a library, you know, this huge higher power, one is secular, one is not. But it is a place of, it's a place that instantiates an idea of how we can become better people and how we can order the world that we exist in.
Right. But, I mean, you're talking about the Central Library as well. And I've just referenced the Los Angeles Central Library. That's the subject of the book. And branch libraries come up, too. But I think very different from a church, a Central Library can exist as a symbol of the city, as a place for the city to be proud of. And we're seeing that in Atlanta, where our Central Library, which was built during a time when downtown Atlanta was thriving. They brought in a famous architect. It was one of his last buildings. Just this past year, it's being dismantled and turned into a branch library. So the Atlanta system will no longer have a central library.
Now, you should explain that a little bit more. It's not sort of being declared a branch library so much as it's the way that it's being sort of changed appears to diminish its centrality.
Right. Well, it is taking up less of a footprint in the building. Yeah. You know, half of the building is being leased out to other purposes. And, I mean, symbolically, it is becoming a branch. It's no longer going to have the stature that it did when it was built or even 10 years ago.
In the library book, the Susan Orlean book, she talks about a library bond issue to raise money for that Los Angeles public library that burned down. And actually it was to raise money for the building that eventually came to be and that burned down later, the Goodhue building. And the marketing materials, I guess you could call it, for raising money said things like, oh, Seattle and San Francisco have these great libraries that you know, their citizens can use to reflect like how, you know, learned they are and how, you know, important
don't
the city is.
Don't let them
is.
Have it's, the better stadium.
Right. But it's, but it was the library was about the mind. So yeah, it is a symbol, and about how highfalutin and book learned they are.
I think also there's, the idea that the library, especially if you kind of come out of the Carnegie sort of push and Dewey's sort of early on, like, this is what we're for. The library represents the idea that we are going to have a better citizenry or a more engaged and informed citizenry. And so all of us will be uplifted in that way. I'm not a church-going person, so I don't know how people feel about being church-going people now. But my sense is that, you know, the betterment of the soul for your eventual transcendence is the church, whereas the library implies the betterment of the mind for the eventual transcendence of the community.
One thing they might have in common is the gut wrenching that happens when one burns down and is destroyed.
Yeah, you don't have to deconsecrate a library, though. You just got to take the books out.
Well, you don't have to deconsecrate a church if it's Protestant.
I think Fred knows more about this than I do. Amit, get us out of here.
Well, we'll be back with more on Lost in the Stacks, left side of the hour.
Hi, this is Wayne Clough, President Emeritus of Georgia Tech and Secretary Emeritus of the Smithsonian Institution. And you are listening to Lost in the Stacks on WREK Atlanta.
I I could listen to that ID this whole show, man, just over and over again. Today's Lost in the Stacks is called The Library Book. Okay, real talk. Have you ever stolen a library book?
Susan Orlean talks about how frequently books go missing, mm-hmm. how frequently people just take them and never return them. And I did that once in my life when your grandmother, so when my mom was dying and we were reading to her, her favorite book was David Copperfield. So yeah. I had brought a copy of David Copperfield from the Los Altos Library. And that was the copy we were reading to her when she actually died. So I simply could not return that copy of the book. And I told them I had lost the book and I paid for it. But that book is still on the bookshelf up here in our family room. And I feel no regret about that. And then I also recall you finding that book somewhere and giving me a copy, not knowing that I had stolen it from the library. So we have two copies up there of the same exact copy of that book. And they're both up there. And the note that you wrote to include in that is in the copy you gave me.
We don't have any information about the note. File this set under TL573.H52.
I mean, the whole idea of archiving, being an archivist, is to do this, that it's important to hold on to these things. It's obviously gone beyond holding on to a special manuscript or book or periodical. It is where we are today with everything that's digital that you all do. And that just gets, it just gets bigger and bigger. It just balloons, doesn't it? Mushrooms to kind of a fear, like I've got to hold on to, I've got to steal that book.
Yeah.
Reading this was so cathartic to me because I do work in preservation, with the purpose being mostly saving stuff, feeling the profound importance of the individual's memory, and always inherent in that desire, that feeling driven to save, is the necessity to destroy or appraise or select or be willing to let go of something that you can't save.
Yeah.
And so the fire, everything with the fire, was so cathartic to me because I have so much anxiety about saving stuff. The idea that you could just let it burn is very liberating. Not that I would ever want to do that.
Yeah, that maybe you would still be okay if you let it all burn, whatever that it is.
Whoa, you just heard from Wendy and her mom. And before that was Libraries by Yellow Ostrich, a blast from the past for this radio show. And we started with Flames Go Higher by the Eagles of Death Metal, right after some of Debbie's thoughts on the library book. Those were songs about flames going up and buildings coming down. This is Lost in the Stacks, and our show today is all about Susan Orlean's The Library Book and our responses to it. And we have come to the final segment and the final thing, the fire, the bright, cleansing, apocalyptic fire.
Apparently it was so hot that it wasn't a color anymore. It was clear. You could see straight through it. And it was almost hot enough to just completely destroy everything that it touched.
You know, I have to admit that I am completely empathetic to Wendy's reaction to the fire, this idea that it's like very compelling, that to make it impossible to save anything releases you of the responsibility to save something, to choose something, to start from scratch.
Yeah, and you know, this creation and destruction, the cycle of creation and destruction, there's a conflation of the two terms, creative destruction, which suggests that the only way new ideas emerge is when older ideas are destroyed. The library is a site for that through weeding and cataloging and superimposing new books on old ones or new electronic materials on older ideas.
Let's not forget, though, Wendy is an archivist. So a different mission than just a librarian. And even Wendy, the archivist, has a little bit of a lean in when it comes to the idea of a fire destroying everything. Where do you stand with that, Fred?
I think Susan Orlean has kind of a sympathetic view, maybe not totally aligned with the archivist view, but a sympathetic view. She talks about in the book about libraries being sort of like not where time stops, but it's a dam on time, like, you know, stopping a river, and that all the stories and narratives and things are accumulated there and just like continuously added to. So it's kind of, that's kind of nostalgic and maybe wistful way to look at libraries.
In one of the chapters, Orlean also riffs on what she says is a Senegalese slang or phrase for someone dying. She says the polite expression for saying someone died is to say that his or her library has burned. And then she takes that idea and says, we each have a private library, like the record of what has happened in us, to us, around us. And when we say, you know, oh, their stories died with them, or, you know, write your memoirs before you're gone, in a way it's trying to get the information out of the private library.
Mm-hmm.
I will admit, I burn my notebooks. I think I've said that on the show before. I do a lot of talking. I do a lot of presenting of things, but only on my terms. And the things that are my raw material, my actual records, my actual archives are going with me if I have anything to say about it.
Marley, have you destroyed anything in your personal archive?
Oh, just by being almost 50 years old, that things kind of float away.
In the archive of your memory.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, but in my personal archive of stuff?
Yeah.
Yes, I married someone who taught me the joy of letting go of stuff. And it's been no trouble to let things go. Now, it doesn't mean that I'm not delighted when I come across something that's really old, you know, something from my past. But as a child of two pack rats, it's been great to kind of get shed of some of that. Can I say one more thing from the book, though?
Yes, yeah. Please.
Do we have enough time? So you mentioned the Library of Alexandria before.
Yeah.
So the next chapter, after what you were just reading, she talks about the Library of Alexandria. And she said that by the time it burned for the final time, people had begun to believe it was a living thing, an enormous, infinite communal brain containing all the existing knowledge in the entire world with the potential for the sort of independent intelligence we now fear in supercomputers.
The books can't talk to each other, not yet.
No,
even true. Though the network can.
Yeah.
So we think of the library as the memory of a place, the memory of a culture, and then we compare ourselves to a library. You know, the idea of our memories being somehow records that you can access. But I think we're totally uncatalogued. You know, people are. I don't think we do a very good job of creating finding aids, or often we're lost in the stacks of ourselves. So the library is a desire to make order out of a mental chaos. And yet, the library burned, and a lot of people were romantically attached to it and deeply compelled by the idea of this place burning down. We're almost done with the segment. I think everybody should say what they thought of the library burning.
Well, I'll close the way Susan Orlean closed in her book. She says on the very last page, this is why I wanted to write this book, to tell about a place I love that doesn't belong to me but feels like it's mine, and how that feels marvelous and exceptional. All the things that are wrong in this world seem conquered by a library's simple, unspoken promise. Here I am. Please tell me your story. Here is my story. Please listen.
Amit shakes his head, nods his head, says yes. Take it away, Fred.
So we'll be back after having scratched the surface of the library.
There you go.
Once again, as is our usual practice on this show. But we'll be back after a music set.
File this burning set under Z733.L8742075.
Blue Crystal Fire by Robbie Basho.
Don't you want to do some vibrato when you say that?
I cannot do that justice. That was impressive singing. I Want to Burn You Down by Mike Doty. Songs about the beauty of creation and destruction. Well, mostly destruction.
I keep returning to what you said at the beginning of this idea of taking the library for granted, or in the background, that like it couldn't even matter or be noticed. And then very quickly, it can like slip into something that's both like incredibly powerful for as a refuge or as a sanctuary, right? But also as like threatening. Mm-hmm. The book being the thing that anybody needs to steal because they need that. Like the value can very quickly shift and become something like so essential that people will commit a crime around it or within it. There's not that many places that can be so innocuous and then like very quickly so dangerous or like full of passion.
There's kind of everything in there if you really consider it. And hearing the history of that, this one library, but that's just one library. That's not even libraries in the world. Mm-hmm. All of that goes on and has gone on.
Lost in the Stacks is a collaboration between WREK Atlanta and the Georgia Tech Library, produced by Charlie Bennett, Meet Doshi, Wendy Hagenmeyer, and Fred Rasko.
That's you.
And today, Marla Gibbons.
Fred was our engineer today, and the show was brought to you in part by the Library Collective and their social and professional network, League of Awesome Librarians. Find out more about them at thelibrarycollective.org.
Legal counsel and a box of Strike Anywhere matches were provided by the Burris Intellectual Property Law Group in Atlanta, Georgia.
Special thanks to Susan Orlean for writing the book, to her mother for taking her to the library, to Wendy's mom, Debbie, for joining our book club from afar, and thanks, as always, to each and every one of you for listening.
Find us online at lostinthestacks.org, and you can subscribe to our podcast pretty much anywhere you get your audio fix.
Next week on Lost in the Stacks, we're going to the movies, because that's what you do for Christmas these days.
It's time for our last song. As librarians, from time to time, we may talk about burning down existing systems, but it's all metaphorical, right? Right? Foucault. Right?
Metaphorical, Amit.
In truth, libraries inspire in us the fires of the internal and heartfelt kind, of passionate enthusiasm for our professional and principled missions. So let's close with a song about the flames that burn inside us. From 1941, this is I Don't Want to Set the World on Fire by the Ink Spots, right here on Lost in the Stacks.
This is going to be great. Have you heard this song?
I have not.
You're going to love this.
Have a great weekend, everyone. ¶¶